Josh or no?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, good people. It's Thursday, which means it's time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch, but not brought to you by Glenn Quatermain, who's fossicking around for gold somewhere out in Kalgoorlie. We have instead the digital sports editor extraordinaire, Nick Rinn from the West Online. I am Mark Duffield, the senior sports writer, or the senior football writer from the West Australian newspaper. Rinnie, how are you?
I'm good, Duff. Thanks for having me. I'm not sure Quarters is fossicking for gold. I reckon there's a good chance he's propping up the Palace Bar. but good to be here anyway.
I think the Palace Bar might be propping him up, mate.
Yeah, it's propped up a few in his time.
All right, so saw you at the footy on Saturday night. What caught your eye out of the first weekend of finals?
Oh, there's lots I liked out of the first weekend of finals. I think you know my... infatuation with Toby Green. I love everything he does.
So do you like the kicking?
Yeah, I actually do. I can't fault him. If I had to take a step back and look at it objectively, I'd probably find issue with it. But I'm never going to be objective when it comes to Toby Green. He can do what he likes in my eyes. He's a hell of an entertaining player every time I watch him.
So I don't think he's going to be able to do as he likes anymore because I suspect...
No, not next year.
the strong message from the AFL is that it's not legal, and I think if he does it and kicks someone in the head in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I suspect there may be a match review officer issue for him to deal with.
Well, I thought what they came out with, basically, they said it's not illegal yet, is basically the message I took out from their fines, because he got cleared for both of the ones where he stuck the leg out and kicked, I think it was Nick Newman in the guts. He actually got cleared for that, but they made sure they included the stipulation that under the current rulings, it was okay. So there might be a change there, but I think at the moment, unless he kicks someone in the face, but he did that last year and he only got a fine. So
yeah, that was after a handball. Like there is, it's one of the quirks of our game, isn't it, that when you're in a marking contest, you seem to be able to do things you can't do if you're just receiving a handball.
Mm.
So he got away with, that was Dalhouse.
Yeah, Dalhouse in the face, cut him open.
In the face, lacerated his face.
Studs up.
I think that if Toby Green were to do it again this week, I suspect Toby Green will have an issue.
Well, I think he'll also start to face an issue when he gets too many fines because they brought in the rule that they then threw out the window when Trent Cotchin smashed Dylan Shiel in the head. But I think that'll be his problem, that they'll say, look, if you stick your boot out too many times, you're going to get fined, and you get enough fines, you're going to get suspended, and we really need you mid-September.
Okay, so big retirement during the week. Eric McKenzie, and a lot of people will, even West Coast fans, will have almost forgotten who Eric McKenzie is, but he's 2014 John Worsfold medal winner.
Mm-hmm.
Very good defender. Of course, the person who strained himself through a point post.
Yeah, to save the final.
In the elimination final against Port Adelaide last year in Adelaide to effectively force extra time.
Mm.
Foot issues, bringing another person undone. It's almost like the foot is the worst part of your body you can hurt now in the AFL.
Yeah, it's going to take you through the year. They're hard, really hard ones to come back from, and we're seeing more and more, particularly with draftees. There was that period of about 3 years where they kept getting foot stress fractures, which is, I think, a lot of them are coming over from Victoria and playing on hard grounds over in WA, but it's a concern. I reckon he hasn't been the same footballer since he did his ACL, and he might have even been a footballer from another era, wasn't he? Like, he's a great one-on-one defender, but the question is whether you can carry too many of them in the modern game. Blokes who won't give you much on the rebound.
He's kind of like a better version of Zach Dawson.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah,
he? He's,
yeah.
Zach Dawson was a great competitor in the air, a good one-on-one defender, but at the end of the day, when the ball got into his hands, everyone at Fremantle got very, very nervous.
Zach Dawson.
Easy, as he was known to Eagles fans, was not quite to the extreme that Zach was, but a little bit similar.
Mm.
A magnificent athlete, a big man, like 196, 197 centimetres, extraordinarily quick for his size, which meant he had great closing speed on the better tall forwards of the game. Certainly capable of playing and matching up on any tall forward in the AFL, any of the really good ones. Like, you could put him on Lance Franklin, you could put him on Tom Lynch, any of those guys. Eric McKenzie was going to give you a good run for your money. He had a really good record on Travis Cloak as well.
I can remember one game at Subi. It might have been that year he won the Best and Fairest, where it was a wet day and he just gave Lance Franklin an absolute bath, just didn't let him get anywhere near it. So, yeah, really capable player. Clearly capable player. He won a Best and Fairest. Probably unlucky to be not included in the All-Australian. I think that was one of the first times Adam Simpson realised that there was a rule for Victorians and a rule for everyone else. I think I remember him making some comments. But, yeah, it's sort of a shame that he couldn't get right when West Coast were right at the top.
Yeah, and look, it's not going to have an impact on West Coast grand final chances because obviously he hasn't played at all this year. Even with the injury to Brad Shepherd, they have Will Schofield lined up. Oscar Allen is a tall defensive option.
Yep.
And obviously Tom Barras is holding his own in the team, and obviously Jeremy McGovern, the interceptor extraordinaire. So they're still pretty well set up at the back end.
And I think they're also playing Jared Brander in defence at waffle level. So, you know, going forward, there might not have even been a spot for him next year, really.
Yeah, I hope they don't just think that that's where Brand is going to play. I saw Brand play centre half forward in a preseason match.
Very good.
And he looks to me like a very smart forward. I think if they persevere with him down that end, I think they'll end up with a pretty bloody good AFL forward.
Do you think it's a bit of a cop out when they put, because it's very hard to play forward? Do you think it's a bit of a cop out sometimes when they throw a bloke down back as a key back? Not that it's not hard to play as a key defender, but I think actually getting out and getting touches and keeping your confidence up when sometimes things aren't going well in the forward line. Do you just have to work through that, or are you happy with them throwing people around?
I don't know. I played at a lower level, but I know it was always easier to play back than forward.
Yeah, yeah.
If you weren't getting a kick for a while down the pointy end, you used to go down the back end and just harvest the footy a little bit. Look, I think that particularly with young players coming through like an Oscar Allen, like a Jared Brander, until they're getting used to, or while they're getting used to playing against the bigger bodies and the adult bodies, then I think it helps them to where the game comes to them, if you like, rather than where they have to make the play and initiate the play.
Yeah, gotcha.
I think that simplifies the game a little bit for them, and then they can get used to the physical aspect of the game and the fitness requirements of the game and the ball use requirements of the game. And then once they're comfortable with that, I guess if you looked at a wider league example of it, Tom McDonald
is
a very good example. You know, cut his teeth as a defender and he's now a very good forward. We'll stay with West Coast for the moment, Ned.
Yeah, sorry, went on a bit of a tangent there.
Andrew Gaff. I have a feeling Andrew Gaff is going to stay with the Eagles.
Yeah, where's that feeling come from?
I would have thought the whispering winds about him leaving that you hear away from what becomes, you know, social media speculation and all that kind of thing. The sort of things that we hear because we talk to people in and around the industry, I would have thought those wins would have been much louder that he was going if he was actually going. Now, I think it's still dicey, and I think that a lot is going to depend on the health of his dad.
Yep.
His dad, he will probably need to be reasonably optimistic about his father's health, I think, to come back over here and continue to play. So if he is unable to reach that point, then there's a good chance he'll go home. I just get the feeling Andrew Gaff has never come out and said he's likely to go.
No, and on his father, I was speaking to a couple of people at the club, that seems to be the only reason they think that he'd go. They'd be pretty confident, if not for that he'd stay. So it probably is going to come down to that. But you're right, he hasn't made a lot of noises about anything since round 20. He's been flying under the radar pretty well. But, yeah, you'd think that the jungle drums would be beating a bit harder. Neil Cordy from the Daily Telly went on radio this morning and said that Sydney might be a late option, given that they're offloading so many blokes and have so much space. But I think that would be pretty unlikely, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know how Andrew Gaff would translate to the SCG on the confined spaces. He's a running machine. He works the wings at Optus Stadium's almost like the perfect ground for him. It's a bit longer than most grounds.
Yep.
It's a bit wider than Domain Stadium was. He's able to work the width and length of it. Ideally, I think it's no coincidence that he's had his best season of footy up until that incident in the Derby. So, yeah, I watch this space, and I suspect we probably won't get an answer until the end of the season.
Yep.
Either way, but I think there is reason for West Coast to be reasonably optimistic where Andrew Gaff is concerned.
Well, if you're Andrew Gaff and the pay is within, you know, it's not something that's going to completely convince you to pack up and move away. You'd stay with West Coast at the moment, wouldn't you?
I think he's always been happy here. And the indications earlier in the season before the Derby incident and before his father's health issues was that he was more likely to stay than go.
Yep.
So again, watch this space. There could yet be a last twist in the tail of this.
It's been a hell of a year for Andrew Gaff, hasn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, no, best season that he's had, I think. Became a more penetrating player, became a more inside player, and then unfortunately had a brain snap in the Derby and didn't cease to be a player in 2018. And then obviously the major health issue with his father, which trumps really everything else that has gone on this year. So that will be a major guiding factor. But let's move on to Geelong, one of the losers from last week. A raft of delistings, none of which really has any great impact on their senior team. Most of them are players who barely saw the light of day, if they saw the light of day at all.
Yep.
Where do you see the Cats headed?
I think, well, they're in a win now mode, aren't they? They want to. Their list means that they can't really bottom out. They've got guys who are coming right towards the peak of it, Dangerfield and Selwood. You know, you might get another 4 years out of them, but they've got to win a flag in those 4 years with the model they've gone with. They haven't got a lot of draft picks. Picked up mature age guys, you know, Tim Kelly, Stewart, Menegola. They want to win. I can see it turning pretty quickly for them next year, but I think there's a few tweaks they've got to make with their system. But I think at the moment they have the cattle, if they get it right, bringing a couple of other young guys next year through the draft. But I think that, like, I don't think that it's a complete bust. Do you?
I'm not sure, and I'm going to put Sydney in this basket as well, and I'm going to say with Hawthorne, watch this space.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure the whole transition model actually works if premierships are what you're after.
Okay.
And now Hawthorne may roll Melbourne on tomorrow night and be in an AFL preliminary final, so that would kind of half throw my argument out. But Hawthorne were able to bring in two A-graders, two young A-grade talents.
Yep.
In O'Meara and Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
and don't forget Geelong has been able to bring in Dangerfield. Those sort of players don't fall off trees.
Yeah, you're right.
Every year. I mean, Mitchell was a stuff up by Sydney in terms of how much they're prepared to pay, because I believe there was bugger all money between Tom Mitchell going and staying.
Sometimes it seems like Horse just doesn't like some people too much, doesn't it?
Well, I think what happened was Tommy Mitchell was overpaid.
Yeah, right.
In his early time there, and the club felt he owed them money. So when it came to his next contract negotiation, instead of thinking he's a required player, we need to pay market price, they kind of thought, we've paid him this and he still owes us this.
Emotions do funny things at football clubs.
Exactly. it's the old human condition. Even at the best AFL clubs, I think it does kick in and become a factor a little bit. And, of course, O'Meara spilled out of Gold Coast, who are leaking players.
Yeah, that's like a completely different thing, isn't it?
At the moment. Dangerfield leaves Adelaide. You know, all these clubs have been able to top up with A-grade talent. I think eventually, though, you stop being able to top up with A-grade talent.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see with Geelong at the moment is that they're light on for pressure forwards.
Yep.
They're light on for a second marking target in attack.
Mm-hmm.
And when Harry Taylor goes and Lachie Henderson is not far away from being in decline, they're going to be light on down the other end as well.
Yeah, it's kind of their bottom six players are just completely, it drops off a map. So you've got your top bracket, which are really good. You've got your second bracket of guys who are probably forming above their pay packet, guys like Kelly and Menegola. And then there's no one there at the next bracket, is there?
And I look at Sydney and I look at, you know, they've re-signed McVeigh, they've re-signed Grundy.
Yeah.
Hanbury looks like he's cooked. Kieran Jack is all but cooked.
Yep.
You know, he's another 20 minutes in the oven and then...
Well, his old man played for New South Wales Origin, so they're all cooked. They're no good.
You know, they've got issues, and I think they get Callum Mills back next year, which is great. Isaac Heaney is an emerging superstar. There's no doubt about that. But I think their rucks are good, not great. And I think they've got issues around the place.
Yeah, they get the sort of ruck forward of the future this year through the draft in Nick Blakey.
Yes.
But that's
3 years from fruition.
Yeah, he's not going to be able to perform at a high level next year. He's at all. They never really do. But, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I remember doing a preview for Sydney for our mag a couple of years ago, and the feeling was that they're in the middle of two eras. The best players from the previous era when they were performing and competing for premierships was all retiring or sort of tailing off, and the next era isn't quite ready to come through yet.
And if you're a supporter of these clubs, we're not bagging them for what
No, you got to have a dip.
Because Geelong were in a preliminary final last year.
Mm.
And Sydney, you know, have put themselves in the mix again, as they always do. But I just wonder where it all leads eventually and whether I think the model is somewhere between what Carlton are trying to do
yep.
and what Sydney and Geelong are trying to do. I think, you know, selling the farm and loading up on kids is really difficult,
mm-hmm.
as the Blues have found out. And I think the other way of keeping yourself in contention, maybe falling out of the eight one year, clambering back in the next, which all of those clubs have done, I think Hawthorn, Geelong and Sydney have
yep.
done over the last 8 or 9 years. I think you can do it, but I'm not sure it leads all the way back to the top.
Yeah, having said that, I still like the idea of if you play, if you're in finals in enough year, eventually, you know, you might get one out of the box and be able to snag it. I think that's sort of what Sydney have done over 20 years, really, isn't it?
I do too. I think the problem with it is it's almost like the top six is the cutoff point for genuinely being
in the
mix, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you see two really bad exits, like we saw from Geelong and Sydney this last weekend,
yep.
then you start to think, oh, I'm not sure about this. I don't know where this heads. Because what you see when you look at their lists is you see as much downside as you see upside.
Yep. At Geelong, so the two people they've been linked to already in the trade period, Luke Dalhouse is a free agent, which if it's 2016 Luke Dalhouse, that's a win. If it's 2018 Luke Dalhouse, that's meh. and the other one's Gary Rowan's probably more likely.
Mm.
Is he pressure forward? Would you say Gary Rowan's a pressure forward?
I think he's a crumble under pressure forward.
I
think one of the problems that Gary's had, and I love Gary Rowan, what he's been able to do, a horrendous injury that he suffered, but he goes missing, I think, in games. And I've actually been unfair to him there. He doesn't just go missing in big games. He just goes missing in games.
Yep.
So every now and again, Gary Rowan will bob up and have an impact in a game, and then every now and again, he'll disappear off the face of the earth in a game. Does he add something to Geelong? I suspect he's going to be one of those guys who'll be in their best 22 for most of the year.
Yep.
But maybe not in their best 22 for all of the year. Although maybe he thinks long, skinny ground, he's got
run
pace.
Out.
He can lead. He can lead up. He can, you know, he can get off his man. Maybe there would be a role for him then. The Swans have made it clear that Luke Parker not
going anywhere.
Not going anywhere. Obviously, they are continuing to wait and see what comes on offer for Dan Hanbury at St Kilda. St Kilda they're shameless, aren't they? Just
don't go after anybody.
Throwing money after. Have you had a phone call yet?
I haven't. Yeah, no, but it might be due to my early retirement. I never kicked it behind in a game, I'll just say that. All goals. So St Kilda, I'll send you my phone number.
So Parker, I think that's a no-brainer, must keep for Sydney. Interesting one, of course, is Jake Lloyd as well, who not yet signed. I would have thought that he's a must-keep for Sydney.
Well, I think he's a must-keep. And getting rid of Hanbury and Rowan and Kurt Tippett retired, so Kurt Tippett's pay is no longer on the books next year. I think this was the last year of his deal, so that goes off the books. So I think there's plenty of money for them to throw at Jake Lloyd to keep around.
I hope so, because I think he was their main rebounder this year.
Mm.
They're going to lose Jared McVeigh at the end of next year, and I have a feeling that Jared McVeigh is going to, at some point next year, think that he went 1 year too many.
Yeah, he's going to get to that point, isn't he?
So I hope that Sydney, for their sake, I hope they keep Jake Lloyd around. So Collingwood, we think, is the club into Stephen May. They're the club that needs a power defender. The Dogs keep barking that Stephen May is going to be leaving Gold Coast, even though he has a year of a contract yet to run. The Suns, it's almost like they're a bit like Fremantle's doing with Lachie Neale. They're seeing what a club will throw at them.
Yeah.
And if, not that Fremantle's officially doing that with Lachie Neale, but I suspect unofficially that's what they're doing.
Yeah, no, they're very confident.
that's what I think they're privately doing. I think, Collingwood saying there's no way that Gold Coast gets two first-round picks for Stephen May. What else does Collingwood have to give to Gold Coast that would get that deal done?
Well, there's a lot of
It's got to be one first-round pick, obviously.
There's got to be a first-round pick involved, and there's probably got to be another club involved, to be honest. There's Darcy Moore talk about
Sydney,
and someone threw up Hawthorn, like he'd be a good fit there. So they might be able to get something done in a three-way trade, but I think Gold Coast are kind of happy to see what they get this year. And I think if he goes to the end of next year and leaves anyway, like they're going to get a compensation pick near their first round pick, which is not going to be great either. Well, it is going to be great as a pick, but not great as a ladder position.
Do you see Gold Coast ever reaching that point of critical mass where they will have enough senior players who are battle hardened enough to win enough games to stop this cavalcade of talent walking through the exit door?
Yeah, I do, but I think this is almost throw a bomb under at time and start again. So it's going to be as if this was Gold Coast entering
the game again.
This is ground zero again, I think, and that's probably why they're happy to shop Stephen May, because he sort of represents the old era as well. So maybe they're moving on from that. And then they're talking about guys like Nick Newman, so they're kind of looking to half go down the Sydney path of getting blokes who aren't quite getting a game but are good enough, and seeing what they can do with them. But it's one to watch. But they're not going to be good for – it's going to be a few years. But I think blokes like – this is really Mark Evans and Stewie Jew and John Haynes, the footy manager. This is their first real off-season together to sort of execute the plan they've come up with. So it'll be interesting to wait and see what they do this season. But I think – this off-season. But I think it's – yeah, I think this is ground zero again.
When – does the plan have to be about we have to stop players leaving the club no matter what?
Yeah, well, immediately. Well, no, not immediately. Okay, with the new era.
Except
I'll say
for
next
Stephen
year.
May.
Except for Stephen May.
And
you're
Tom
at Stephen
Lynch.
May and Tom Lynch. Don't worry about them. I think from next year onwards, that's when they, unless it's Stephen May sticks around and they're happy to let him go, I think from next year onwards it's they start making a stand. Because there will be blokes who come out of contract and want to go home. They brought in four Victorians as first round picks a couple of years ago, and not all of them are getting games. A lot of them showing little bits of promise when they've got exposure. But guys like Ben Ainsworth, from what I remember him in his draft year, like he's got a fair ego, the kid, so he's not going to want to be playing off Broadway for too long. So he's one when he comes out of contract next. I think that's going to be that's going to show you what their approach is.
So of all their kids, I like him almost the best.
Yeah, he's very good.
Because he's powerful, he can play forward, he can play midfield, he impacts the scoreboard. So that's, if you're saying he's the most likely to leave, I think we're just facing more of the same with Gold Coast going forward.
Yeah, I think he's the most likely to ask the question. So I'll be really interested to see how they handle that situation. Because he's also one that you could, if clubs start getting aggressive on with their listed players, he's one which could be forced to the draft situation and not end up at a club that he wants to go to, which we haven't seen in some time.
Okay, one more before we
this
get
is
on
not
with
to say that he's asked for a trade or done anything yet. I don't know what his feelings are this season, but I remember from his draft year, he rates himself the kid, which you all have to do at the top end of the draft. So
yeah.
I just think he's one, put him on a watch list.
So one more before we go on to the games this weekend. Is Tim Kelly gettable by either WA club?
Well, I did a bit of a look today, and if Geelong think they can win a flag next year, there's no chance. Like, what? It just doesn't make sense at all. The maximum he can earn under the CBA next year is about $250,000, which is $100,000 less than the AFL average. So Geelong have a player who's one of their best five, and they're paying him peanuts. Well, they're just going to hand that over to another club. Like, it's go back to him and say, look, we understand you want to go, but you're contracted. You got a year. We think we can win a flag next year with you in it, so you're sticking around. And it's also not like he's like they have a slight advantage that he has a year's contract to run at the trade table, but I don't think that advantage goes away next year either, because he's still not a free agent.
Mm.
So if he wants to come over here, probably wants to go to West Coast.
And it's unlikely that either WA club will be right at the bottom.
Exactly.
And you only get to force the trade or the pre-season draft if you're right at the bottom. I suspect even where Fremantle are at, I suspect Geelong has reason to believe there will be two or three clubs below Fremantle when they do the final ladder next year, and West Coast won't be anywhere near the bottom.
No, and so you would suggest that at the moment it looks like West Coast would be a more likely destination for him. Is that about right?
Yeah. What's a reasonable draft pick for Tim Kelly?
Reasonable draft pick for Tim Kelly is about where he was picked last year.
Yeah, I would say given he's proven that he belongs, and I think that's an important way to put it, because I think he's been overplayed a little bit.
Mm.
He's not a superstar. He is a very good AFL player.
Yeah.
He belongs in the AFL. So given he's proven that he belongs, I think he's maybe a 15 to 20.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right for Tim Kelly.
And I think, so if you have that pick available, which this year West Coast would,
yeah,
But as you say, if Geelong, I'm not sure Geelong's in the premiership window. That's an interesting one.
I think they think they are. The way their list profile comes together, it's if they don't think they're in the premiership window next year, then what the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
So that's why I just can't see them entertaining anything this year. Particularly, so if it is West Coast, he wants to go to West Coast next year, force him to the draft and be like, well, you can go to Freo then. And he'll go to Freo and, you know, probably another couple of years of being down the ladder and he's home, but is he happy?
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. I just can't see for the life of me why Geelong would entertain anything this off-season.
All right, we'll move on to the games. Tomorrow night at the MCG, the resurgent Ds, just absolutely, the bandwagon is full. They've got people hanging off the side. They're
wrong.
All back from the snowfields. All the four-wheel drives are parked somewhere near the MCG so they can drive home after they've walked down there, after they've left their cocktail lounges and their...
whatever else, exclusive Melbourne men's clubs.
Their brandy and cigar bars.
Yeah.
Who wins out of the Hawks and the Ds?
You've got to say the Ds. They're so dynamic and exciting when they're up and going. And you would say that Alistair Clarkson might have a few counters to that, but he doesn't like that kind of talk because don't want to give him a compliment. Yeah, bloody sheep.
Bah, humbug.
I think the Ds have just got too many weapons for him. But, you know, having said that, the recency bias makes you always comes into play in this week of finals, doesn't it? So anything could happen. Who's your pick?
I'm going to go with the Ds. I think that when Hawthorn beat them earlier in the year, Melbourne was playing around with some pretty funky stuff in terms of how they structured up behind the ball. There was, you know, when they were setting up for centre square stoppages, there was no one on the wings. They had extra numbers at the back end of the square. And really, Hawthorn just picks that sort of stuff apart.
Yep.
Because if you give them a spare player with time and space to use the ball, you can't close down space enough to stop them from using the ball.
Yep.
If we look at the way Melbourne's gone about it more recently, they've played the 6-6-6 structure. That has worked very well for them. It's what they put in place when they played West Coast, and they've basically been going downhill at a rapid rate. Downhill as in gaining momentum,
like
a snowball, to use an appropriate
term. Yeah, it has to be snow reference, right?
ever since. So they are almost, apart from Richmond, they are almost the form team of the minute. I think, and let's not discount West Coast form either. They have been very sound. But Clarkson, we won't say he's going to pull a rabbit out of the hat.
No, it's just structure.
But he's probably going to have to do some variation of his system that upsets the Melbourne apple cart, because I just get the feeling that Melbourne has too much power midfield. They have good targets to aim at, and they've got an enormous amount of steam built up. And I think Hawthorn's form leading into the finals was deceptive.
Yep.
But I think they had a softish draw coming in. And we looked at it about 4 or 5 weeks out on the podcast, actually, Quarters and I, and we said, given who Hawthorn's playing, they could squeak into the top four here. And that's exactly what they did. But Melbourne is really rolling along now. I'm going to go the Ds.
I think one of the main differences between the two is if you look at the 22 that they'll name, you could probably pick four blokes at Melbourne who could tear you apart. And at Hawthorn, I think you'd struggle for one who's just really going to rip the game apart. They're all steady and all solid, but I don't know that they have those real, I don't say X factor because it's not quite X factor, it's more than that, but the real superstars in there. Melbourne have got Gawn and Clayton Oliver and Petrarca on his day is really dynamic. So they've got a few. Tom McDonald shows that he can take a few clunks, and so does Sam Wiedemann. There's not quite the same level of talent at Hawthorn.
If I look for potential downside out of last week's game with Melbourne, I wonder whether they can get a game of that quality out of Wiedemann again. And I wonder whether Viney, after his time out,
start to feel it,
backs up. Second up. Often the second game up is the one that really challenges them. So it'll be interesting to see how those two players come up. If I'm looking for upside, I think Max Gawn can have a bigger influence on the game than he had last week.
Yep.
He was very good early and then just solid. And I think Petrarca is a player that needs to get fair dinkum about his talent. You know, Christian Petrarca too often is reaching for balls one-handed and just flirting with ability a little bit. You know, good footy in finals is about performing the basics at a really, really high level.
Yep.
And I don't think he's figured that out yet. With the greater intensity, you start mucking around with one-handed takes and this kind of thing, you get found out pretty quickly. And I think a couple of times last week he dropped balls he should have taken. So it'll be interesting to see whether that message has been driven home.
Do you think he needs the Gary Ablett 2006 feedback session?
The feedback session from the teammates. And, of course, from the Hawks, I mean, you had Sean Burgoyne had a stinker last week after an early heavy knock. Luke Bruce, who just never misses shots on goal, missed that sitter from the top of the square. Jack Gunston didn't have a great game. So there's a bit of upside there for the Hawks as well. But they will miss Ben Stratton out of defence. He's a massive out for them. So we're both on the D's.
Yep.
Let's move on to Saturday. The fixturing that's earned the ire of Eddie Maguire.
No, what hasn't?
People love Eddie getting sad about stuff. This is one of my favourite things in footy when Eddie gets sad and everybody just
But he's
goes
right. In this case, he's right.
Yeah, look, I don't disagree.
Maybe don't carry on so much about it so publicly when your team's trying to get itself up mentally to play.
Mm.
But, you know, effectively they're playing off a 6-day break because they had to get on the red eye back from Perth. And if they win, they'll be on another 6-day break into the prelim against Richmond. And I remember a year, 2012, where both of our teams, Fremantle and West Coast, had to play back-to-back 6-day breaks in finals and it got them. Second half of the second final, they both gave really good accounts of themselves. I think Fremantle went to Adelaide and led the Crows late into the match, and West Coast went to Melbourne and led Collingwood late into the match. But eventually that harder path in a final with a greater intensity, I think it catches up with you.
Well, the thing about 6-day breaks and any mention of like the length of the break between games is you never really hear the winners talk about how many days they had to prepare, do you? Like, it's never too many like, look, they came back off a 6-day break. That's my only issue with going public with it. It's fine to have a sook about it behind closed doors, or as the everybody wants to say these days, within the four walls of the football club.
Yeah, everything else is outside noise.
Outside noise in the four walls of the football club. But have a sook about it inside the walls, but once you're outside, it doesn't matter. And I think Nathan Buckley's sticking to that line, but his president maybe didn't get that memo.
Okay, now if we talk about second up being an issue, of course, GWS has four in this bracket. Obviously, Toby Green, who was a major player.
Doesn't need a break.
Last weekend.
He could play off a two-day break.
Yeah, Toby Green is presently walking down the East Coast 100 metres offshore.
Oil on water.
In Ned's eyes, just planing down through the water to get to the ground, as far as Nick Rinn is concerned.
He grabbed one fish and fed the whole Pacific Islands.
Brett Deledio, who obviously has had the calf issues, came back and played last week, played solidly. Zach Williams, who came into the team and was a star. I think he, as far as second up goes, he is the one I reckon would be the question mark. Matty De Boer, who's the fourth, will just come in and play the role that Matty De Boer plays, as he always does. But I suspect that Zach Williams is the one that might go guts up, second up.
But don't forget that Collingwood have a similar situation on their hands.
Goldsack,
Treloar.
Yeah.
They've got a few there.
I wouldn't count Jeremy Howe in that bracket. Jeremy Howe missed a few games at the end of the season, but I think with the season he's had behind him, he'll be fine second up. But, certainly Treloar and Goldsack could be an issue for them.
Yeah, and I don't know if this one's the recency bias coming into play as well, but I've liked GWS the whole way, and it looks like, we don't know yet whether they'll have Kelly, but they've got enough, I think, to get Collingwood. It's going to be a pro-Collingwood crowd, which will help. I think they've got the talent. Is it legitimate 50-50 call this game, I think?
I agree. I'm not comfortable either way on this one. I think GWS's form was very, very good before the last two home and away rounds.
Yep.
And they were badly injury affected against Sydney in the Sydney Derby, which people didn't take account of when they bagged them.
Yeah. Well, Phil Davis was down in the first few minutes and we saw how important he is on Buddy.
Exactly. And then they didn't have anything to play for in the second half against Melbourne at the MCG the next week. And they fell out of contention very badly, didn't take their chances when they were forward anyway, got pretty significantly beaten, and everyone discounted them as a finals contender after that. I think if Melbourne beats Hawthorn on Friday night, I think the five teams left when we go into that game on Saturday, I think they will be the best five teams in the competition.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So either one of the winners in this game, I think, would be a worthy preliminary finalist. Collingwood, because of the way they've defied injury and just battled on. And they were magnificent for three quarters against West Coast last week. And, they couldn't get it done in the end. Hats off to West Coast for the way they came over the top of them in the last quarter. Mm-hmm. But certainly the Pies put it all on the table for the first three and a bit quarters, I thought. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tip Collingwood, but I'm really tossing a coin on this one.
Yeah. I'll go GWS just to be contrary.
But honestly, do they win it, as far as you're concerned?
Well, they win it in their just pure talent in the end. I don't think the Pies have the right people to contain the likes of Toby Green and look after Jeremy Cameron at the same time. And then you've got, guys like Matty DeBoer who can do a role on the blokes who want to bounce out of Collingwood's back half. In the middle, if Josh Kelly's playing, well, you got Josh Kelly, and that's always going to be a win for you.
I just can't imagine a scenario where Josh Kelly plays. What we saw at the SCG,
it looked last cooked.
Would have had to have been an optical illusion for Josh Kelly to step out in this game.
Just jab the hell out of it. I can't feel your leg. Then they've got guys like Callum Ward.
They've got Ryan Griffin to come in.
His eyes are very close together, Ryan Griffin. Does that count against him? They're really close.
Where's he from? Somewhere in the outback?
Good question. That's their next in, and that was the captain of Western Bulldogs, 3-4 years ago.
So I think if you had to bring a kid in because Josh Kelly wasn't fit, I think that's when you think, well, maybe we have to inject Josh Kelly with a painkiller and play him. When the player coming in is Ryan Griffin, then, or whoever gets picked in front of Ryan Griffin must be going all right.
Yeah.
Then I think it's worth your while giving Josh Kelly another week. See if you can get him up in case you get through. Don't forget, to win it, they're going to have to win three from here.
Yeah, it's a big ask, but it's been 3 years ago. I would have said that no chance, but we've seen a lot of things in 3 years.
But my point is that if Josh Kelly can be absolutely cherry ripe in a prelim and you get there,
you'd rather that.
And don't forget that the winner plays Richmond, so you need your absolute best for that game to go any further than that. So to me, the right play in this one is Griffin.
Yep.
And then hopefully get Kelly
cross
up
your fingers
for next week. Going to tip Collingwood. Would not be at all surprised to be wrong on this one.
Yeah, well, I'll go GWS and the same.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. We hope you tipped well this week. We hope you tipped well last week. We hope that your club does not suffer a Gold Coast-like mass walkout in the 7 days coming before we talk to you again. We'll be back on Tuesday. Quarters will be back from Kalgoorlie. He'll probably be nursing a hangover.
Probably, but that'll be okay.
We'll do a complete wrap of the ramifications of the round. We'll talk about the run into the big preliminary finals. And we hope to talk to you then. Will be brought to you again by Tab Touch. Thank you.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.